But this passage is really kind of asking us to compare two different cities. It's asking us to compare the reactions of two different groups in two different cities, with Berea kind of having the appropriate response. Berea is the one that's kind of like, Luke is saying, this is kind of how you want to be. This is kind of how we like the way they receive the gospel here. So just kind of looking at both cities, Thessalonica was a pretty cool city. And there's a picture here, and you can see the nerd in me just couldn't leave this one alone. There are some cities from Bible times that the ruins are there and the city just kind of ended. It's a dead city. And so you have to go way out in the boonies to see the ruins of a city because the city no longer exists. Thessalonica is one that never quit existing. It's always been there. So if you want to see ruins of ancient Thessalonica, you got to dig down. And so you can see here in the picture, there's a modern city, and just beneath it are the ruins of an ancient Roman city. So it's pretty cool. I do want y'all to understand, though, if you look up in the text of their experience in Thessalonica, it wasn't a total failure. They started in a synagogue, and there was some success there. When they went to Thessalonica, some of the Jewish people in the synagogue got on board, and it says that so did some Greeks, so did some prominent women. So there was success in Thessalonica. It wasn't a complete failure. But there was a group of Jewish people in the synagogue who got jealous. And we don't really know why, what they were specifically jealous about. It was probably a mix of a lot of things. But I'll just give you two suggestions on what I think they're probably jealous about. They probably didn't like these new teachers coming from out of town, Paul and Silas, kind of teaching something different, maybe getting some people on board. Maybe people like, man, I really like this Paul and Silas guy. So basically, they got these other teachers from outside of town kind of stealing their thunder. So I think that was one thing they were probably jealous about. Another thing that was a common problem is, remember, they're going around and they're kind of saying like, hey, you know the Gentiles that we've always been separate from? Well, they get full inclusion in the kingdom of God now. And so there may have been some jealousy about that. Like, hey, we don't want to totally bring these guys in. And so either way, one of the reasons they're jealous and one of the reasons they're being combative here is because they don't like change. They don't want to accept the new thing that God is doing. That's what's happening with a group of these people in Thessalonica. And so they end up reporting them to the authorities. They go and take them. They try to get them arrested. And with the same claim, pretty much the same claim that you see in Philippi. So in both Philippi and Thessalonica, the narrative that the opponents of Christianity want to spin is that, hey, this Christian group, they're dangerous to the political authority of Rome. These group of Christians, they want to overthrow the Roman government. They are dangerous, and they need to be stamped out. But in both times, in Philippi and in Thessalonica, that's not really the case. It's really clear that that's not the case. It's clear that there's a group that just doesn't like them for some other reason, but the way to get them in trouble, the way to get them in Rome's crosshairs is to say they're out to take down Rome. They're a threat to Rome's political authority. And in neither case is that really the case. And so really the nerdy historical scholars, they look at the whole book of Acts and say, what are some of the goals? What are some of the unstated goals in Acts? And one of the unstated goals that I believe is true is they're trying to get the word out to say, hey, Rome, the church is not a threat. The church is not gunning for Rome. The church is not trying to start some new political kingdom here. That's not our agenda. And anytime you hear that, anytime you hear that the church is out to take down Caesar, there's something else going on there. That's just what they're saying to get people on board. So don't buy that for a second. I think that's a really important thing that was going on historically, and we need to know today. Usually when the church was persecuted in the early Roman Empire, it had something to do with them fearing that the church is trying to take down Rome, that the church isn't loyal to Rome. And this is kind of saying like, look, hey, they're not combative towards the Roman Empire here. And anytime you hear that, there's probably something else going on that people don't like, and they're just pointing to that. And so anyway, while all this is going on in Thessalonica, Paul and Silas are like, hey, remember that time when we were in Philippi and we got arrested and beat for no reason and spent a night in jail? Yeah, I didn't like doing that. Let's go. Let's get out of here. So once this crowd's getting worked up in Thessalonica, Paul and Silas, they slip out and they go to nearby Berea. And there, if you like go on like, because remember, a lot of these places they're going to are, they're really cool places. These would be cool vacation spots. And if you're like doing a tour through Greece, you'll probably hit Thessalonica and Berea on the same day. So if you go to the next slide, you can kind of see on a map that they're pretty close together. And Berea, there's a different response here. Luke speaks more highly of the Bereans, but maybe not for the reason we always think. Usually they get credit for examining the scriptures to see whether what Paul was saying is true, which is good. I'm glad that they did that. I'm glad. And we kind of think like, oh yeah, the Bereans, you know, they're skeptical. You're not going to pull a fast one on them. They're going to get you. And that's not exactly what was going on. It is good to not just believe everything you're told. It is good to check the scriptures. But sometimes we kind of paint them as like being argumentative or combative. Like they're there with their Bibles ready, and whenever an elder teaches or whenever a traveling preacher comes through, that they're trying to catch them. That they're just sitting there trying to say, oh, nope, you're wrong. Look what it says here. That's not what they were doing. They weren't combative. They weren't trying to catch somebody. They weren't trying to trap a preacher or a teacher or a missionary. They're actually being praised for the opposite. It was the Thessalonians who were really combative. It was the Thessalonians who were trying to get people. Here, he's actually praising them, one, for their willingness to check the scripture, but two, for them being actually open, for being receptive of the message. That's the first thing they get. The first thing he says is, hey, they were really receptive to the message. He's praising them for being open-minded, which is really interesting. But if you compare them with the Thessalonians, they were not open-minded. The Thessalonians were quick to shut down. They were quick to say, nope, not going to do it. They didn't even look to see if what Paul and Silas said was true. They shut it down before even entertaining the idea. Meanwhile, the Bereans are hearing what they're saying, and they're like, huh, that's interesting. I don't know. I don't know if it's totally true, but that's interesting. I'm at least going to entertain this idea and see what the scriptures say. So they were open to hearing something new. They were open to hearing that God's doing something different. They were open to this new idea of this new movement of God. And that's what they're being praised for. Not for their combativeness and skepticism, but their willingness to hear and at least entertain a new idea. And again, that's not saying that skepticism doesn't have its place. But what's being praised here, what's being praised in the scripture, is their willingness to hear something new. And Luke applauds that, their willingness to entertain this idea. As opposed to the Thessalonians who were like, la, 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 I don't want to hear that. And so there's kind of two things I want y'all to hear this morning. It is one, a lack of success on the mission field. A lack of success in evangelism. Whether this be like as a church or as an individual. If you go and you're trying to share your faith, or if you're trying to go plant a church, or whatever it is, if you have a missionary, let's just say named Majest in Haiti, or if you are putting up a blessing box to reach out to people in the neighborhood, if it's not automatically having like, you know, just tons of converts, that doesn't mean God's not behind it. It doesn't mean God doesn't want that to happen. Even if there's some people combating what you're doing, like, man, Majest is running into all kinds of issues in Haiti. And just because those bad things are happening, just because there's challenges to the mission, doesn't mean that God's not behind it, or that God's saying, hey, you should move, you should get out, this isn't where I want you. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying by that? I think sometimes we think a little bit of challenge to a mission means maybe God's not behind it. But you can see from the very beginning, you can see from here, the very beginning, some of the first missionary journeys that the church has ever made, that sometimes it's not just a bunch of fast converts, that it's not just everybody being receptive. So if there's challenges to the mission, whether it be you as an individual or to the church, it doesn't mean that God doesn't want this or God doesn't support this. So I think very often we cut missionary programs. We cut mission trips, we cut support, we cut things that are really doing a good thing, but it just takes more time than we want. We need to be more patient with some of these things, and we don't need to cut these things so soon because we're not seeing the results we want. Now, on the other side of that, sometimes we do have the other problem. Sometimes we stick with something forever, and so we do need to kind of reevaluate looking, okay, what is our mission? What mission are we a part of? What are we doing here? Is it working? So one, I think we kind of need to have a balance here. Sometimes we cut things too fast and give up on things too fast, and then sometimes we stick with things too long. So it really takes prayer, discernment, and maybe some conversation amongst leaders of, hey, what are we doing here? Is God really supporting this? Is God behind this? And so we don't want to lean too far one way or another. So I think that's one important thing I see here, because as you look at the second missionary journey, it's effective and then it's not. There's people who are really receptive and then there's people who really aren't. And so we shouldn't just rule it out whenever we're trying to do a new mission or a new outreach and it feels like there's pushback. That doesn't mean we should just totally cancel it. The other thing I think we really need to have here is we need to have a mindset that is very open to the movement of God outside of our comfort zones, that is very open to God doing things in ways that maybe we wouldn't expect him to work, especially in missions, especially on the mission field. I remember in college hearing a speaker. I think he's one you probably know. I can't remember now. I think he was an ACU guy who came to chapel at Oklahoma Christian, and he said, if I want to convert a Muslim, if I want to talk to a Muslim man about faith and convert him to the Christian faith, I have to expect him to be very open-minded. And so when I go into when I approach this conversation, I need to be just as open to changing my faith as I expect him to be about changing his faith. And there was a part of me, and I still am totally like, I don't know. If I'm trying to convert a Muslim guy, I'm pretty convinced I'm right. I'm pretty convinced I've got this whole God thing figured out. And so I don't know if I totally agree, but we do need to have that empathy and respect of like, man, what are we asking of people? Asking people to totally change their faith and their worldview is a lot. So I think it is important to realize we're asking people to be pretty open-minded when we hit the mission field. We're asking people to be pretty open-minded when we're trying to evangelize and share faith. And so I do think there's something important to be said about that. And the Bereans, they're the example of that. Hey, we're open to God being a little bit different than we thought. Hey, we're open to be to God working in a way that we didn't totally expect. So we need an openness, especially on the foreign mission field. Especially on the foreign mission field, because God works in different ways through different people. Maybe we need to be open to him being worshiped in forms that maybe we wouldn't normally be comfortable with. You will find that in most foreign churches that you go to, when they are contextualized to that culture, they look a lot different. You know, if you've been to a mission-filled church, odds are they're going to look a little bit different than the church here. They're going to look a little bit different than the church in Texas. I have been to one in South Africa that looked just like the church in Texas, and it was the strangest thing ever. But then I've been to some churches in Africa where it's like, is this Church Christ? What's going on here? This is awesome and crazy and fun. All that to say is when we, not only do we need to be open to how God is moving and open to contextualizing God in a different way that's meaningful to them, is in missions, we need to be open to the people we are speaking with, the people we are serving. We need to be open to them. And it's basically called listening. We need to actually listen. I think sometimes we've been taught, you know, maybe kind of a more old-fashioned way, is like we're taught this like 3 points that we sit there and someone's supposed to listen to us while we like do this Bible study and tell them why we're right about everything and why they need to convert. That doesn't have a whole lot of listening. That doesn't respect the uniqueness of the person we're approaching and their unique needs and their living situation. And so that's really kind of what I see when I go on the mission field and I see a church that looks exactly like the church in Texas, looks like Mason Church of Christ. When I see that in Africa, I think somebody wasn't really listening here. Somebody wasn't really like paying attention to the context that they were in. Someone's not letting the locals own their church. They're just setting up the same church. So there wasn't much listening. And the churches that are contextualized and look a little bit different, there's some listening. And so we need to be willing to do that as we share faith. Not to just say, shh, listen to my spiel. But we need to be willing to listen to them and their experience, their needs, their questions, and be open to knowing them And then once we hear about their experience and their life and show that we actually care about who they are as people, that they're not just a number that we want to baptize and then kind of ditch to say, hey, we really care about who you are, then maybe we can show them how the gospel uniquely impacts them. Then maybe we can show them how Jesus uniquely cares about them and how this hope that Christ gives can be helpful specifically to them in their unique situation. So we need to have this openness to people and this openness to what God is doing in like communal missions as a church, but also individually as we share our faith. If you aren't willing to listen, then they won't be willing to listen to you. But this morning, I want you to know we have a God who listens and who knows about our uniqueness, who loves us in all of our uniqueness. I mean, he created us that way, right? And who engages us and allows us to be a part of what he's doing. What a privilege. What an honor to be able to engage with him in the inbreaking of the kingdom into the world today. And we have a God who listens, who believes in us, and who wants us to join him. If you're here this morning and you want to join him in that mission, if you want to give your life to Christ, or if you need any prayer, we invite you to come now as together we stand and sing.